So before we get started with our next presentation, NCHEA likes to leave a place a little bit better than when it found it, and I'm fortunate that we're able to do that again this year. There's a local charity in Moore County called Family Promise of Moore County, and the Cradle and some other events that we had were all part of a donation to try to gather money to support that local charity. Every child deserves a safe place to sleep. Family Promise of Moore County provides shelter, meals, and services to homeless women and children in their community. With that, Ms. Norma, if you please come up, and you can use that mic, but we have a check for $1,000 that we're able to raise for you guys, and thank you so much for what you do for this community.
Thank you. I'm on. There you go. Welcome to beautiful Moore County. Our shelter, I'm just giving you a quick synopsis of what we are. We are one of the first brick and mortar shelters in the state of North Carolina. We serve women with children only, so sorry, men, not invited. We found that best practice for children is to give them a place that is consistent while they're with us. Prior to our brick and mortar, we were going to different congregations every night where the cots would be brought out, the rollaway beds, they would sleep there. The congregation would host them for 1 week, and then the next week they would go on to the next one and the next one and the next one, which is very unsettling to children and moms as well. We are a four-bedroom facility. Each bedroom has its own bathroom. It is very expensive to run, if you can imagine. We have laundry services. We're all inclusive. We do not double up our families. Each family has their own room, and then we have common areas. As you can imagine, we typically have a waiting list. We try to get through that waiting list as soon as possible because the word is out what a wonderful shelter Family Promise is. It is beautiful, well-kept, well-maintained. We have a play yard for the children, and our host congregations bring dinner to the families, a nice hot cooked meal. Monday through Thursday, all of our women are required to work while they're at the shelter unless they're on disability. Our children are required to attend school or daycare while they're at the facility. We have had lots of babies at our facility as well, and we do accommodate both very young children as well as pregnant moms, as well as we've had some handicapped children come join us. So we are an all-inclusive program, except for men, and an age requirement is also not there if you have children. And we've had some much older folks come join us within the last few years. And our goal is to stop homelessness in Moore County. Thank you very much for your generosity. And I'm sorry our executive director couldn't be here today. You got stuck with me. So you have a wonderful visit in Moore County. Enjoy our sights. It's a lovely place to be. And stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Norma. Grab the orange bucket on the way out. There's a few, little bit more donations in there. Thank you so much. And thank you, associate members, that helped pull this off to make this possible as far as that goes. So I'm doing the, let's see, what was I going to do? This is the, I'm calling in the lefty. Calling in the closer here as far as before the state gets up here. We had a cancellation on a program because healthcare members were presenting and they got called back to the mothership. So Roger and Georgia were so nice to offer a presentation they'd done in the past with other organizations on patient experience. And I said, they said they would just love to do an improv and put one on for us today. So with that, I'll pass it over to you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dion. Yeah, this will be interesting. This got pulled together fairly quickly. We did what we call a Tom Brady. We deflated our presentation a little bit. So,
wait a second. Not only do we have humor, we have toilet paper.
Yes, we have valuable giveaways.
On
Whenever we talk about patient experience, I'm reminded a story that I heard about, John F. Kennedy. He was speaking at the opening of a library, and as he was talking to the crowd about this great library, he said, you know, if this facility, if this library impacts just one child, it'll be worth all the money, it'll be worth all the effort. He finished his speech, and he got off stage. A friend came up and said, okay, really, do you mean this one child thing? And he said, yes, if it's my child. Same thing with healthcare. Healthcare is a multi-trillion dollar industry. It is huge. There are gigantic organizations. But when it's one of our loved ones that's impacted, it becomes intensely personal, very intimate, very quickly. So today we're talking about patient experience, which is about that one person, one of us, a child, a loved one. So we want to get into that. The speakers we have, I knew we did more than one slide on this. The speakers we have today, Charlie Hall is with SES Engineering, Georgia Cameron is Little, she's our healthcare studio principal out of our Charlotte office. My name is Roger Wilkerson. We joked a lot about pulling this presentation together. There was a lot of wine involved. We think we fixed all those problems when we did that, but if you see any misspellings, just go with it. And we basically told Dion when he wants us to quit talking to stand up. So that's how this is organized. This quote from Dr. Feinberg with Geisinger Health System. Heard him being interviewed, this was several years ago, he's being interviewed on NPR. He says, I don't want to be the best in healthcare, I want us to be the best. To be good in healthcare patient satisfaction makes you like, you know, the DMV. And that really came home as to healthcare has been its own industry, its own bubble. And with Affordable Care Act, with choice, with a lot of focus on the patient as a customer, we're now seeing organizations look for best practices outside of healthcare. So what are other organizations doing? The retail side, hospitality side, has focused on the customer experience for decades. There's a reason why, I was going to say when we go shopping, but I don't go shopping. There's a reason why when we go into a store, we go over to here and we buy this. And folks in retail have got that figured out. So what are the different elements that we can pull into that? So that's a lot of how the patient experience is developed. We have to look at things differently. And so today we're going to be talking about Levine Cancer Institute, part of Atrium Health in Charlotte. And when we started on this, we adopted that. We have to look at it differently. And so one of the elements that we added to our team that we have not done before, and I've been in this industry quite a few years, we pulled in retail experts. We pulled in experience design experts as we were developing solutions for this project. A little bit about Levine Cancer Institute. Atrium Health is really focused on recruiting the best in the best, and not just with cancer, but in their other centers of excellence, and they have a strong focus on recruitment and patient care and that sort of thing. So the Levine Cancer Institute, you can see here, a wide range of regional facilities, facilities within Charlotte, the range of cancers that are treated, and range of services that are provided. The image that you see here, and you got the mission statement for the Institute up there that I'll let you read, but the image that you see here was the first facility. That was designed by another firm. They were planning on doing the expansion 10 years later, 5 years almost to the day, they had to start on the second facility because of the growth that they were seeing. And you can see in the last part of that mission statement where they talk about providing patients treatment they need and closer to where they live, which is why you saw the focus of all the regional facilities that they have out there. One of the things I found really exciting about Levain Cancer is that what you see at the bottom of the slide, they are the first outpatient multi-site facility to achieve the Plaintree designation. I'm sure most of y'all are familiar with Plaintree. It is a highly patient-focused approach, and to have a Plaintree designation, certainly you have to meet all those types of criteria. One of those being a patient family advisory council that is involved in the planning of projects, call it a PFAC. And so we're making sure that we are hearing from the patients and from the families of their needs and their wants. But really, to be the first multi-site facility to have this designation said a lot about their focus and their commitment to the patient. You can see the stats up here about the project. The image on the left is actually the caregiver's lounge. So we talk a lot about experience design focusing on the patient. Well, experience design also focuses on the individuals that are providing care, the staff members that are there. And again, that one person, not just a patient, but it's also those that are working in facilities. So the Carolina Panthers donated space to have a very nice caregiver lounge for them, and that's the image that you see. And again, the stats that you see. Expansion was completed last year. Renovation is wrapping up really as we speak right now. So it's exciting to see this project coming online. And then here's the project team, great project team, very successful project. Atrium is the owner, Little is the architects, SES provided MEP, Rogers Builders, Wright McGraw Byer for interior design, and Block for civil, and Bennett Plus for structural engineer. So again, a very strong team that we had on the project. So what is experience design? I summed it up very quickly by saying it's about that one person. It's taking something that's gigantic and it's bringing it down and making it personal, making it intimate, and that's what it is. If we look at it from the Levain project, we're talking about different moments, different touch points. So a patient comes in from wherever they live. They're coming into the facility and they're going to this spot. They're going to the here. They're going here. They're going here. They're going here. How do we unify all that? It starts before they get to the facility, and it ends after they've left the facility. But what can we do as designers to unify all that, have continuity, develop moments along the way? So when we kicked this off, we did a two-day workshop that first time I've ever done this or even seen it done in my career, a two-day workshop, and it was led by a very strong healthcare architect, Ron Boozer. A lot of y'all know Ron. And it was led by Daniel Montano, who comes from our retail side and does all the brand experience from a retail component. Very honest, he didn't know a whole lot about healthcare, but he knows a whole lot about why people do what they do from a customer experience standpoint. And so we had this two-day workshop. It was very, very successful. We're going to talk about some of the elements that came out of that. But it was a very exciting process, and it was really neat to just think differently, come at it from a different direction. And the staff loved it, and they really appreciated the effort. You want to get into a little bit of experience?
All right, so I had never done experience design before either, and I'm used to having a program and a mission statement from the client. We developed guiding principles, and we put the building together, and I always thought I was doing patient-centered design, but when I met Daniel, who I wish he was here, he's way more entertaining than I am, but when I met Daniel, we really kind of scrapped all of that. And we developed an experience design map that then we reassembled all of those parts and pieces around. Sometimes I literally felt like my brain was smoking because it was backward from what I was used to. But it created such buy-in for the whole organization. At every meeting, they talked about their experience design target, and all the decisions we made wound up wrapping around that. So it was really great. There were three methodologies that we focused on to do that. It was understanding the customer, signature moments, and brand attachment. I'm going to go through those really quickly. We pulled all of those examples out of the presentation because we wanted to get some engineering-specific content in here. But if anybody's interested in the full thing, I'd be happy to send it to you. One of the things we need to do is understand the customers, and when we say customer, we mean the patients, their family members and caregivers, and the staff that work in the building. So understanding their behaviors, understanding their needs to create a strategy as to how we're going to achieve their experience design map. Signature moments are the moments that we look for that are unique to our client, that you're not going to get anywhere else. If they went and got cancer treatment somewhere else, it would be a different experience. And we try to capitalize on what those signature moments are and magnify their presence within the design and minimize the things that detract from those signature moments. And brand attachment, which I think you guys are really going to appreciate. We're mostly practical, really practical people here. If you have an emotional connection to something, but it's not a functional solution, that's not going to work. So we're trying to marry those two things to create a building that really is viable, that really supports what people need, that meets scope, schedule, budget constraints, and do it in a way that we're creating brand attachment. I mean, Daniel talked a lot about your card you swipe at the grocery store. Everywhere has a loyalty program. And they're not going to issue a cancer patient a frequent shopper card because I think we all know they don't want to be there. But we talked about that mentality of how can you make it something that they actually look forward to? If they have to go, how can we make it so they want to be there and that they want to be specifically at LCI? So the experience map is based on a series of touch points, and we map those touch points from the patient, family caregiver, and staff perspectives. And in that workshop that Roger talked about, we hit a couple of items for each touch point. I was going to go through those quickly. The biggest thing was the voice of customer. And for each touch point, we had a sentence of what was the prevailing thought that person was having at that specific touch point. We focused on state of mind to try to understand what they were going through. There were some exercises to help generate empathy and for everybody to be looking at it from a perspective other than what they usually do. So physicians, we were asking them to think about being a staff member, a visitor, a patient, etc. We also talked about needs and wants from a mind-body-spirit connection. Some of those are really practical, like I need to be able to move around and be able to be sick if you need to be while you're getting infusion treatment, all the way to needing a place for meditation. There were some visual preferences that was kind of like a Pinterest board for the individual touch point that we actually assembled with the client, and they were bringing their Pinterest pages in. And then ultimately, the whole group crafted an experience objective for every touch point. So this is the journey map, and when we went through each touch point, what we wanted the experience to be like, we tried to map the paths of people throughout the facility. And at that point, I want to get Charlie up here because we're going to talk about how all this relates to engineering, because I bet that's what the question on all your minds.
Well, this is an engineering conference, so they decided to add an engineer to the team, and I'm the lucky guy. When you think about the patient experience, most people think about the visible, right? And our architectural friends here do a great job of the physical environment, making things appealing to the patient, trying to make their trip as comfortable as possible. Other than everybody in this room, most people don't think about the invisible systems, the air that's moving around, the electricity, the gases, and how do those systems affect the patient experience. The number one way all these integrated systems work together, what most people think about first is infection control, right? Because there's airborne viruses in the air, obviously. We're all aware of that these days. And how these systems are filtered, how you do your pressurizations, how many air changes you do. Doing this properly can help prevent the spread of infections, but doing it improperly could also contribute to spreading the infections. So it's really important these systems are all configured properly, you know, to keep the patient experience, especially in a cancer center where they have compromised immunity, making sure these systems are operating effectively to keep them from getting an airborne virus. Also infects safety. You know, this is a high-rise building. The stair system is pressurized, you know, to help people evacuate the building effectively if there's a fire. You know, we have a tremendous amount of emergency power in the building. Sizable generator, went well beyond what is required for egress or life safety. Since we have a USP pharmacy where they do drug mixing and drug compounding, it's imperative they don't lose power during that process. We have some labs where they do 24/7 experiments, and these things are there all the time. You know, we can't lose power while that's going on. We have to keep the temperatures right. We have to keep the humidities right, all of which affect the patient experience. And lastly, comfort. You know, obviously comfort is important to patient well-being. Which one of these buttons do I push?
Okay. I think point it there.
So we're going to go through a few slides, talk about a few of these systems, and George is going to chime in here with me. Specialty lighting was really important on this job. That is something that's visible from the engineering perspective that can affect the patient experience. You know, we use the lighting not just for wayfinding to get you into the building or get you to where you're going, but we also used it for community impact. We have color-changing LEDs on the building for different community functions that are going on, such as pink lighting for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Also, we have a valet system at LCI-2. We also did that at LCI-1. Had some lessons learned from LCI-1 with the valet and the vestibule and the cold air coming in. We don't have those experiences now on LCI-2 because we had that lessons learned. Also, we tried to use a lot of natural lighting. You know, we could put artificial lighting anywhere and make it do whatever we want to do, but getting some sunlight in is really important, you know, for the well-being and the health of the patients. This is a group gathering area, just unbelievable views of downtown Charlotte. I don't know how well you can see it from there, but it's just amazing if you're standing in the space looking out at that view. I did a similar thing at the infusion bays. And we have a bank of bays with a lot of natural light coming in. Also have some private bays and even did some isolation infusion bays. I keep pointing over here. The exercise area. You can see some of the comments there on the right. You know, the lighting is bright, but it's not cold. It kind of has a skylight appeal to it. A lot of natural light coming in. Space feels cozy, but not cramped. Those are things you can see visually, but all the engineering behind that, you know, affects the space.
Oh.
Are you on?
Wait. Hello. Okay, good.
I
was about to yell. That would have been bad. The experience objective is what was created as part of the experience mapping process, and the image is the completed product. And the last time we did this presentation, the building wasn't built yet. So going through and looking at the experience objective and then seeing the image was actually a really fun thing to do, to kind of think about, did we meet the goals that we had set forth for ourselves? And the lighting and the daylighting was something that we talked about a lot, because we didn't want to overlight or underlight. And the building is not open just 8 to 5. They do Saturday infusions. They have evening events and different clinics. So we knew that people were going to be in there lots of different times of the day.
Now, this is one of the private infusion bays, and you may can see it actually has a view of the roof garden outside, which may be the next slide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that was incorporated into the project for the patient experience, was the roof garden. Well, what does that have to do with engineering? Well, you got to keep it green. You got to keep it lively. It takes water to do that. through irrigation and proper drainage. You want the water to go away where it's supposed to go away and not go somewhere it's not supposed to go.
I do want to point out, yeah. Reef garden, when Atrium Health had leadership changeover, we were challenged to cut as much as we could out of the project, despite the fact that precast was already being fabricated. We were that far along in the process. So we looked at a lot of options, and it actually would have cost them more money to pull the roof garden out of the project because of the stormwater mitigation fee savings. So there was $30,000 cheaper to do the roof garden. And yeah, that was pretty great because it was such a core part of the experience objective for Infusion and for being in the space was to be able to have access to nature and views and daylighting. And it also created an opportunity to incorporate some art. It's really hard to see in the slide, but there are some kinetic sculptures there by a local artist. And so it kind of pulled everything together, even on the outside of the building.
Another couple of unique things we did, we used some prefab racks in like the labs areas because, you know, the technologies change all the time and having to get maintenance in there to make changes. We tried to make that as least disruptive as possible, which you guys all know. You know, any construction job you do is disruptive to your facility. So we tried to avoid disruption, put a lot of shutoff valves, you know, all over the building. It was extra work. But, you know, as things happen and hey, you have things to fix, it's a lot easier to isolate those areas and keep patient care ongoing. Mm-hmm. Lastly, technology obviously is very important in this building. It's another thing that's behind the walls, but people really depend on in our age of connectivity. And it's not just technology getting to the internet, but all the integration of the alarm systems and the call systems and the life safety, all of it relies on that technology backbone. So we spent quite a bit of time, you know, making sure all the technology systems were integrated and operating effectively.
The chapel that's on the screen actually can come alive and they can have multi-site worship services or spiritual care events for patients. And kind of like what we do when we have a WebEx meeting, but they can do that in the chapel, mm-hmm. and they've had already weddings, christenings, all kinds of events in there, and that was part of the objective, to be able to engage the community, but we couldn't have done any of that without having really integrated low voltage and technology.
I think that's it.
Yeah, how are we doing on time? Okay. Okay, maybe I can do five. As I talked about in the beginning,
you can have up like 25 minutes.
Q&A. Talks
long.
Yeah.
Q&A.
Yeah. No, I'm not doing that. Okay. So experience mapping. I talked about how we kind of started with a program, and then we stopped. When we got the project, we stopped. We did an experience design session. We did a lot of field trips. We went to Mayo Clinic. We went to the James Cancer Center and what was the other one? Help me out. Anybody remember? I can't remember. So we took a lot of different people on the team. We had people there for engineering, that we paired them with POM folks at the facilities that we visited. The IT group came. They were paired with the IT at that facility. And it was really interesting to kind of get that information on a lot of different levels. When we came back, we tried to apply the experience map, and we made some pretty significant changes to the program. We added the chapel that was never part of the program originally, and we also added a food venue that would specifically support cancer patients with offerings like bone broth or superfood salads, because there were not many options available on campus that didn't require a significant walk, and most of these people are really tired. So we also shifted Patient Education Center from the back seat in the building to be right off the main lobby and established the caregiver lounge that Roger talked about. We also worked with SES and the owner to try to get the building set up so they could do after-hours events but still keep the place secure, and they also offer some services on Saturdays, and they wanted to limit access to the rest of the building. And with a seven-story building that's connected to another building that's connected to a parking deck, that was a pretty big effort, and it wasn't something that we originally had thought we would do. We centralized registration, which, of course, was extremely controversial, and they were in the midst of transitioning to Epic. So we had to do some additional site visits to observe that process and figure out how we wanted to do that. And then the waiting rooms became welcome lounges. I will get into that in a minute. And the vein access team became a centralized location instead of one in each clinic. And the core lab wound up being a centralized location to get redundancy. So those are some of the big things that changed. And then we also really resequenced the path for the patient through the building. So on the screen in red, you can see all of the elements that patients were experiencing in the current state that they were not thrilled about. So they had to re-register. If they had an infusion and a clinic visit, they had to register twice. They were waiting. They would come in the building, go to their clinic, sit in the waiting room, go get blood drawn, go back to the waiting room, and wait up to 90 minutes for their blood results, and then they would go see the doctor. So we worked really hard to resequence that to eliminate the red and magnify the white, the positive. So the welcome and the personal conversations that they were having with LCS staff was something that everybody really enjoyed. We changed the waiting rooms on each floor to welcome lounges. They don't do registration there. It's literally like, hi, Mrs. Smith, I'm happy to see you. You know, your dog was sick the last time you were here. How's he doing? That kind of conversation. You're looking well. I'm glad to see it. And then the registration all happens on the first floor, and then they go directly to get their blood drawn. And while they're traveling through the building to get to the welcome lounge, their results are already in progress at the centralized core lab, which cut the turnaround time for lab work from about 90 minutes to 30 minutes. This is a map of their current state patient flow, which is basically three separate patient flows depending on what the patient had to do. And we used one of our experience design strategies to create a different flow for all of the same activities, which is what I just verbally described. And then there's also a huge integrative care practice at LCI now. Their whole floor of the building is basically non-revenue generating space, which so it's an incredible opportunity to be able to work on that. But it was a core part of their belief that you have to nurture mind, body, and soul for a patient to truly recover. Project challenges. Charlie, better get up here. One of the things we thought it would be important to talk about experience-wise, they wanted two buildings. They wanted one address. They wanted two drop-off points, but they wanted it to be one building. So wayfinding was really important. Connectivity was something that we had to talk about a lot. I see Ryan laughing over there. There were a lot of things that we had to rethink about the project to make that work.
Well, and you can see it's not only just LCI 1 and LCI 2 that are connected. It's actually the MMP building and the Medical Center Plaza. All four buildings are connected with bridges and open doors, which made it especially challenging with the pressurization systems. You know, trying to keep the lobby's positive pressure when the valet's standing there and cold air is rushing in. So it wasn't just our building that had to be taken into account. It was also these connecting buildings. And it's a very difficult exercise to keep those pressurizations where they should be.
Mm-hmm. Had to overhaul the fire command center. Originally, we were going to have one in each building, and we had to create a new centralized fire command center. And the loading dock area is between the two buildings, so we were basically trying to get patients from one building to the other while walking over a very active loading dock. And so there were a lot of different strategies that we employed there. The other thing we ran into was when the building was originally programmed prior to us starting, it did not include a floor of research labs. So when they decided they wanted to move their translational research program into the building, the 15-foot floor-to-floor height did not work. And we talked with our lab consultant and wound up putting an extra foot and a half into the building, but we couldn't push the building up because it aligned with the original. So we had to push the mechanical room down into the ground, which...
deeper basement.
Yeah. Maybe Charlie didn't use some nice words. And so we had to work through that, and it also meant that the loading dock had to push down as well, which was tied to street level. So there were a lot of different things that we did. One of the things we did to minimize the amount of sinking that we inflicted on our mechanical heart of the building was to go prefab with the lab splines, and a mock-up really helped us with that, which we'll look at in a second. What worked? So we felt like one of the things that worked really well was the steering senior leadership level started a very strong presence in the project, and the end user's input started off minimally and then ramped up. There's a gold mine of information that those folks have, but in the beginning, if you're taking in all that input and you're not tying it to an experience design map or guiding principles, it's very hard to stay focused and to keep your eye on the ball. So we kind of set up the cadence of meetings to do that. And then at the end, we work, you can kind of, it's really washed out on the screen, but the steering team involvement will taper off as we're in the throes of design development and construction documents, but then it ticks back up at the end when we're reconciling everything, which we did before we finished design because we were doing this in a design assist delivery model.
Yeah, and the design assist model really worked well on this project. We had great subcontractors. Adams Electric, I think I've seen here, was one of them. And part of what we did, you know, in the traditional model, the AE team will design the building, and then the contractor will bid the job. And then when they get into their means and methods, that starts all the RFIs and all the change orders, which takes a significant amount of time and can even delay construction. On this project, the entire team was engaged early, and I know y'all have heard this on other design assist, but we all actually worked in the same BIM model, us on the engineering design side and the subcontractors. So they were inputting their means and methods at the same time we were doing our design intent. And that really helped with the speed to market and construction and reducing the number of RFIs.
Yep.
And then having, you know, a true third-party commissioning firm on board, you know, as a third-party set of eyes engaged by the owner, also overseeing what we're doing on the design side and the construction side was really helped the project get open on time, which is very important.
Yeah. I've referenced mock-ups. We did a couple of exam room mock-ups, and by the end we had a physical mock-up model that we used, and every different clinic came through, and there was a set of data points that we collected from them to make final tweaks. We also did a lab mock-up for an example section of bench because we were trying to develop a utility carriage system that ran down the middle that would minimize the amount of connection points and the different routings. And the lab casework vendor didn't have any really great diagrams that were helping the subcontractors understand exactly what they needed to include in their scope and what needed to be provided by the vendor. So they were like waving their hands in the air and talking with their hands, and you know, like Ryan was sitting there thinking, what are they talking about? So we wound up just doing a mock-up, and we were able to reuse all the pieces in the final lab installation, but it helped everybody really understand their routing, and we could take things apart. We developed what that racking system was going to be to carry all of the utilities and to give them as much flexibility in the future as possible. I think design assist, we've already hit on that. Questions, and if you ask a question, you get toilet paper. I'm just saying.
That's the incentive to be engaged.
Or there's limes also.
And we did not steal it from the hotel,
oh,
I'll have you know.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Any questions, guys? You just have some, man. Just have some. Just because. You're a new member. We have a new member here. Aren't you a new member? New member? Any new members in the audience right now? Any new members? Stand up, guys. We had, excuse me for a second.
You're good.
You do what you want.
So a lot of things were, again, this is a flexible conference this year. Please bear with me. So a lot of things I wanted to do that I forgot to do. We have had over like 25 new members, healthcare members, since like January 1st or something like that. It's been tremendous, the number of new healthcare members that we've had join us. Something that NCHEA does a terrible job of is onboarding new members to the association. So that's something that that we're working on. Bob right here is going to be helping us figuring out that onboarding process. Did you know that? Yeah. You know that? Yeah, okay. Bob's going to help us with that. So we're working on an onboarding process for not only state leaders but also new board members. Thanks, you guys. Give them a hand. Thank you. Woo. Who wants a roll of toilet paper to take home with?
I have a question for Charlie.
No, thanks. She's doing it on purpose.
There you go.
They got a text that said, bring home toilet paper from the hotel, please. They're out of them.
What? You want the mic?
Okay, Charlie.
It's a softball, right?
It is. Good one. Okay, based on your typical project compared to this project, how many lighting zones were there? And, like, you don't have to do exact, but if you think of the percentage, because you talked about lighting being very mm-hmm. important. Was that an easy one?
Sure. Well, you know, lighting controls are quite advanced now and also driven by the energy code, as everyone here knows. I would say for energy conservation, probably more than standard number of areas, but each individual space, you know, is kind of controlled by itself. But the ability to dim lights or even turn lights off not in use, that was probably the added controls we used.
Thank you.
There's one over there, Dion.
What's that?
There's one back there. Can you throw that far?
I don't need a mic.
Okay.
you talked about infection control and the spread of disease with things you can't see, like air handlers. What devices did you guys use within the airflow to help prevent against that, specifically in air handlers?
Well, we did have several HEPA filtered systems to help with that. I think we may have even used some UV protection. I think I saw Keith in the room here. Yes, he's nodding his head. So those were probably the two primary things we helped to keep the air distribution from distributing infectious diseases, HEPA filters and UV.
And adding isolation ability in this building where they didn't have that before.
Yeah, on specific isolation spaces, you know, make sure they're under negative pressure to take it out of the building and not spread it within the building.
On the research lab floor, yes.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Any more questions? Charlie, Roger, Georgia, thank you so much for your presentation.
Thanks.
Thank you for a great pinch hit. This was great. You did a good job. Y'all have to go. The state needs your lavaliers, your mics, so they're going to do a little change-out time right now. See, did I have anything? Anybody got anything? The state is looking awful dressed up. I'm just saying they're looking awful dressed up. We're setting some up here. They're getting their mics on. And I'm also, they have a presentation, but I think we also will probably, on the Q&A side of things, we'll spend some time just thinking about how we can all work together during the COVID-19 crisis that's going on right now for next week and the following weeks, how we're going to mitigate our way through this. I know I've been on conference calls with my hospital this morning during the presentations and things like that. It's a clinical nightmare, guys, trying to figure out how to deal with this thing, bringing patients in, and the things that we don't have to deal with, the HIPAA rules and all the different things that corporate compliance has to deal with patient care. So just chill down for a little bit. I'm going to turn this off while they change out a mic, and I'll bring them up.